You're listening to Builderpedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Welcome to the latest episode of Builderpedia. Joining us today is Andy Shaw from the Brickies Network. Welcome, Andy.
Thanks, Matt. Thanks for having me.
So today we're intending to talk about bricks. Bricks have been topical. Bricks have been very interesting in the news, but maybe start by telling us a bit about what you do and tell us more about your company.
Well, I suppose a little bit about me to start with. I'm a bricklayer of 30 plus years. I've been in the construction industry 30 plus years. I started my bricklaying apprenticeship when I was 14, back in the 90s, in the recession we had to have, which was an interesting time to start an apprenticeship back then. And it took me about 6 years to complete my apprenticeship because of on and off work at the time. And worked for a few bricklaying companies, started my own bricklaying business that I ran for 15 years. Had a really tough time running a bricklaying business for the first probably 7 years. Didn't seem to be making any money or really getting ahead for a multitude of factors. And then got some really good business advice and did some business coaching. Started making pretty good coin while I was running a bricklaying business. And then spoke to a lot of other bricklayers and they just weren't having the same experience I was. My regional area, and I thought that's really strange. And then I decided to step out of bricklaying because I'd had a family member, my brother, pass away, and it sort of shook the family and needed to have a bit of a change of life for a while. But then I got into construction management, construction supervising and construction management in my role as really just looking to find out what was going on in the construction industry from the other side of the fence to work out why there was a lot of bricklayers that didn't feel so positive about the industry as I did when I was running my business. And it led me to think, well, maybe bricklayers need a little bit more support on the business side of running a bricklaying business and thinking about it a little bit differently rather than just being a good tradesman that knows how to lay good bricks. But we're not necessarily taught how to be a good business owner and how we fit as bricklayers into the bigger picture of construction.
Yeah.
And that led me to start the Bricklayers Association Australia to be able to support all bricklayers that are struggling as business owners and help them become better business owners and therefore be able to succeed, feed their family and do well for their family and also feel positive about the industry and therefore want to train more guys to come into the industry because we're losing a lot of bricklayers in Australia.
That's why I said in the intro it's topical, like bricklaying has been well, it was famously in the news a couple of years ago when a brick wall in Sydney Southwest collapsed. So everyone was blaming dodgy builders. I don't know if you remember that or saw that at the time. And from what I could tell, there were no brick ties. That's why it collapsed. There was a brick veneer wall with no ties, which is inherently very unstable. But I think bricks are one of those things that were at the leading edge of cost escalation during COVID. In Sydney, anyway, I'm presuming similar things in Melbourne, but it wasn't just a matter of cost of bricklayers. It was finding one at all. And I don't know where they all went. I had this theory that they were all building some elaborate one of Sydney's metro tunnels, kind of face brick. They all seemingly vanished. So I don't know, like, was it demand? Obviously, it was demand driven to a point, but also it seemed like bricklaying was supply problematic as well. It seemed like the very sharp edge of COVID scarcity was toilet paper and bricklayers.
Yeah, 100%. There's a couple of reasons for it. And you're exactly right. In the height of that early COVID period when we were going through, it was quite a large construction boom in from the builder grant that got pushed through early in COVID to build a lot of residential houses, that put a lot of demand on bricklayers. And there's a couple of main parts to it. Like the numbers of bricklayers in Australia have been dropping dramatically for 25 years. So some of the statistical data that I have from the HIA, which it's very hard to get exact data on bricklayers, there's somewhere between 20 and 21,000 bricklayers in Australia, but in residential, which is where I predominantly spend my time, there's only about 15 or 16,000 bricklayers Australia-wide. working in residential construction, but 85% of bricks are laid in residential construction in Australia. So there's very few, but bricklaying is very different to, say, many other trades. Most bricklayers do 98% of their work in new construction. They don't diversify. So it's very boom. If work falls off and there's not enough work for all the bricklayers, well, then they're all fighting each other for work. And when there's a big boom, there's no bricklayers to pull in from other areas of construction to go in because that's all that's there. So they end up working 5, 6, 7 days a week to try and get the work done. You know, so that's very different, but also different to a lot of other trades, say like plumbers, electricians, carpet layers, painters, tilers. They diversify out into other areas and working for a lot of the time, they might be, say, a carpet layer, they might do new construction, which all of those trades work in new construction. They all diversify out into other areas, like a carpet layer might relay carpet that's been worn out. Bricks don't tend to wear out. They're there. So they might do flood work. If there's been a house that's been flooded, they've got to recarpet the house because the carpet's been destroyed. Very rarely does the bricks get destroyed. No one's ever called me up as a bricklayer to say, oh, look, my brickwork's been destroyed because it's flooded. I've got to relay the bricks, or I'm just tired of the bricks that are on my house and I want to relay my house with new bricks. It doesn't sort of happen. And the other point of that as well is bricklayers usually work for a builder or a developer. So they don't diversify out into markets where they could probably sell their value, I suppose, to the end client a little bit more. And it's a very narrow window of work. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. That makes a lot of sense. And I guess from a builder's perspective, bricklaying has been one of those pinch points in construction where it always happens a bit slower and less efficiently than you always hope it does. And it's always somewhat awkward. And not having a go at brickies, but being very honest, for me, it was definitely something that I didn't look forward to in the construction cycle because it was messy. You had to manage deliveries. You had to get the right sand. It's a lot of moving parts, but it's very labor intensive, right? If you look per square meter of product, it's possibly the most labor intensive. Definitely per square meter of built house, it's more labor intensive and labor is an issue, right? So I think that's one thing. And in a world where labor is scarce, which it feels like we're in, it feels like bricklaying has moved from being the ubiquitous product that's everywhere in a budget build. Now it feels more like a luxury product. It feels more like what rough-hewn stone used to be. Is that fair, or is it just, do we just need to work out a way to get more people interested?
There's always a couple of points that add into that. So it's not so much that it's a luxury item. You're 100% correct. It's labor intensive. It's labor intensive. And I'll be honest, when I was construction supervising and a construction manager for a building company, the hardest trade I dealt with were bricklayers.
Yeah.
And it was for a couple of reasons. For some reason in bricklaying, the builder seems to organize all of their materials. And it's just sort of, I don't know if it's always been that way. I never did that when I ran my business. I wanted control of the materials, not necessarily paying for them, but definitely control of delivery, just so I could keep in control of my productivity, just so I could make sure that the material was there on time and it was the right material that I needed for the job. But that was the way I chose to run my business. A lot of builders, and it sounds like the way that you've been doing it, you're supplying the bricks, you're supplying the tiles, you're supplying the sand and the cement, and they just turn up to do the job.
It feels at times that you pay a lot more for a bricky to manage all of that. So there's two ways. There's the value add bricky who project manages, brings the material, organizes it all. But it feels like you pay a disproportionate fee compared to a bricky who you just hire and they turn up with a trowel, a few bits and pieces, maybe some little bit of scaffolding. So it feels like the economics of that don't always stack up. And the biggest danger always is that you end up managing a bricklayer who's managing delivery. So they don't all do it well either. So I think one of the golden rules of in my business and in any business that I, and it was from my own experience and I learned pretty quickly, do not get involved in delivery unless you are on site, right? As a young project manager, I learned pretty quickly that if someone rang me and said they've got a delivery, I would give them the site manager's phone number and say, you need to ring this guy. That was strategic. It wasn't because I was lazy or didn't want to deal with it. It was just the most efficient way to deal with a delivery is the person on site. So that's the dilemma. Bricks have to be handled and moved, and they don't always wheel neatly on a pallet jack to where they need to be laid, right? So
for sure.
So that's one of the biggest drawbacks of bricks is the impact on a construction site, because you have to move them around. And when you're moving bricks, other things can't happen and it tends to be quite labor intensive. And of course, if you can crane them, but that's not always possible. I don't know. I'm thinking, is there a future for brick, or is Dinsel and other systems killing bricks?
You're on the right track that bricklaying or bricks as such, let's go for the history of bricks a little bit. Well, bricks were predominantly a structural product. That's what they were initially. They were a structural product. And then for centuries, they built solid homes. There was either, you'd either build a timber home or you build a solid home. And the bricks
like Three Little Pigs.
Absolutely. So you built a brick solid home or a brick solid building. Then the use of bricks changed in the early 1900s when we got steel and glass, because that made a big difference. Once upon a time, they used to build big high-rise buildings out of brick, but you get to a certain height, the foundations, the ground can't cope with that sort of weight.
Yep.
Then suddenly they started building things like the Eiffel Tower, which back in the 20s and the 30s, which because they had the invention of steel. And then now you look at a high-rise building, there's barely a brick or a block in a high-rise building. It's steel and concrete and glass.
Yep.
That's pretty much how it works. So bricks moved out of that, but in residential, it still stayed there. And one of the big changes in the last, say, 40 or 50 years is the use of concrete. We used to have maybe a brick foundation, brick timber floor, continued up with brick solid, or it might have been then moved into a brick veneer. Then it rolled into having a concrete slab on the first floor. So there was no bricks in there. Then we used maybe a different type of cladding. So brickwork has now moved into not being that structural product and has slowly phased out. And it's very much a face product. It still can be structural and it's a great structural product. And it does have some structural versatility that other products don't have, but that's a little bit limited. But it is very much now a face product cladding that can be chosen to go in there. Still has, there's always the exception, but in general, that's a lot of the ways that it's gone.
Yeah. And also with their modern building standards, it's almost like a superfluous exterior facade, because then you still have to put an insulation layer in behind it. So that's the irony of brick veneers, that according to environmentally conscious architects, the irony of the brick veneer home is that it was always built back to front. So that's the interesting part of it. And of course, the reason for that, just to fill in listeners who may not resonate with that, you want your thermal mass on the inside insulated from the outside. So you want the denser material that can trap more heat or more cold or whatever the house temperature is more comfortable at. And you want to insulate that from the outside. And ironically, we did that back to front for many, many years. And then the funny thing about it was the upgrade. And if you remember back to the 90s, the upgrade was double brick, which is even less insulated. So ironically, the luxury item was the one that was the worst performing, particularly a hot environment where you have your coil or your brick tires, I should say, radiating that heat back to the internal skin from the external skin, heating it up. And you just have this kind of like radiator at night, external temperature cools. So it just feels like the wrong thing. It seems out of like in hindsight, at the time, no one questioned it. No one said anything. But in hindsight, was the story of the Three Little Pigs, was that something invented by the brick industry or the brick supply industry to Because when you're a kid, you just go, oh, yeah, Three Little Pigs, that's a fairy tale. We know all about that. We've heard it. I'm like, hang on a minute. Now that you're older and you know about business and how big organizations function, you kind of go, is it the brick suppliers that drove that? I don't know. I'm speculating. I have no idea whether the brick mafia or the brick cartel was responsible for the Three Little Pigs or the fact that houses were built out of brick. But there's certainly cultural sort of norms and other things that come into it. But so I'm not trying to create some sort of like a conspiracy theory. I'm just curious to, if you were to trace that back, what came first, the brick or the house made of brick?
I'm certainly not sure, and I don't think there was any conspiracy theory. But I think what you're talking about with thermal mass, energy rating of houses, positioning them the right way, all of those things to be efficient, I think we forgot that for 30 years in Australia. I really did, maybe even more. I think in general construction, I think we forgot that. I built a solid concrete block home, put insulation between the walls, and it was unbelievable. And I had all the things going the wrong way with it. It was facing west, the main side of the house, so I had to put a big thing on, a big veranda on the side of it, all of those sorts of things. But it was absolutely amazing. And Think Brick, the Brick Manufacturers Association of Australia, they've actually been doing a 20 to 25 year study on cladding, brick veneer, solid brick insulated. They've actually got all the data on heat release, heat retention, cool release, cool retention. And that's in Newcastle, I think. And it's absolutely fascinating data. And now we've changed our building now that we have 7-star energy rating coming in across Australia if it doesn't get squashed on the head in the next election. That's going to make a big difference to how we build houses and what we have to do. And if the natural step after that is they start looking at carbon footprint of the building for the life cycle of the building, not just the building itself. At the moment, brick looks not like a great carbon footprint because there's a lot of energy that goes into providing brick. But if you look at the carbon footprint of brick, if you lay a face brick and the building lasts for 100 years, well, it never has to be touched for 100 years, where a lot of the other products that we put on houses that's replaced brick, they might need to be maintained, redone every 10, 20, 30 years. And then if that happens, brick looks like a very good product put on the outside. And then if we start going back into needing thermal mass in houses to get a better efficiency rating up to 8 and 9, then double brick with insulation with thermal mass will be looked at, I think, or at least some sort of solid masonry on the inside and then the face brick on the outside.
Just to be clear, is that all bricks? Because bricks come in concrete and clay, or at least they did last time, I guess. Does that change that performance, whether they're clay or...
Clay bricks always perform the best. Concrete is below that, but clay bricks always perform the best. As soon as you have to put something over the top of it, then that affects the way it performs. Like, and if you're using a concrete brick, yeah, you can get face concrete bricks. They last a certain period of time. Clay bricks will always last longer. But if anything that you have to, say, bag or render and paint, there is a performance difference in the fact that they expand and contract differently.
Yeah. What I was told is that clay bricks growing exponentially, but they grow over time, whereas concrete bricks shrink over time. And I've seen this happen. If you mix the two in a wall, the wall will tear itself apart.
Yep.
You've got to stick with one or the other. Never mix the two is my secret tip. And I've seen this happen. I've seen a wall shear itself where there was a patch put into the wall using concrete bricks and the rest of it was clay, and that didn't work at all. It didn't. So bricks have been in Australia ever since white settlement, right? Almost. Mm-hmm. Maybe not the first houses that were made from sandstone, but bricks have been around. But what's the history like? Do they go back? I mean, of course they do, but when were bricks first started? Are they associated with a building material that's as old as civilization?
Do you know what? That's actually a question I don't know the answer to. Like, I should. I know the history of brick in Australia, that you're right, it came here European, and that was a very much a way of building European. But bricks, they used them for the foundations of bridges back a long, long time ago. And when stone wasn't available, they knew that they could fire clay to make it stable and last longer. And if you had clay in that regional area, you could set a brick factory up and make bricks if there was clay available. And that's one thing of brick that you'll find that there's certain areas of Australia and certain parts of the world that there is no brick because there is no clay.
Yeah.
They don't have that. And you'll find if you go back, not so much now because we've got a couple of big companies in Australia that control bricks that own all the brick factories, and a lot of them are shut down. But there used to be lots of regional factories everywhere that there was clay to provide the brick. So it was very much because it was a regional product. It was close on hand. That's how it sort of came into Australia from being a European product, a European way of building.
Yeah. It was once a product for the wealthy. I guess I know that because a lot of timber cottages around where I live, the workers' cottages, the big mansions were built from brick, whereas a lot of the workers' cottages, particularly in early 1900s, were made of timber. Like, that was obviously way more cost effective. Brick became at one point the ubiquitous product for budget homes, right? Every budget home, waves of brick being the premium product to becoming the budget product to then it's sort of coming back to becoming the premium product. So
can I explain that a little bit?
Yeah.
I do have a theory on what I believe is the answer to that. Very much becoming more of a premium product now because we had a shift in here in Australia in the early 2000s or the late 90s where we started building homes to be an investment. They became a money growth thing. But before that, people built a home. And bricks are very durable, and you think about them that they're going to last a long time when you build a home. When we started moving into building houses for, we only really thought about the capital growth and the life cycle. That's when someone builds a house now, usually in general, and I'll say residential suburbia, most people that build a new home, they never live in that home past the life cycle of the product on the outside, whether it be a cladding that has to be painted. They never go past the time it has to be maintained. They usually sell it on, they've made some money out of it, and away it goes. And those products that are cheaper to put on a home and they look great for a little while, but then there's a maintenance factor that goes with them. You spend more on a product that's going to last longer than you do on a product that needs to be maintained on and on and on. That's sort of just the thing. So the way we think about general housing in Australia, residential housing, is it's very much a way we make money out of things. And it's an investment, and your own home's an investment, and you roll it on and get another one, you roll it on and get another one. Where beforehand, you might have built a home that you were going to live in for 20 or 30 years, and you thought about that. I don't have to maintain it. People, you say, oh, I'm going to build a brick home because I don't want to have to maintain the outside of it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't think I've heard anyone in the last 10 years go, oh, I'm building a brick, my home, I'm putting cladding on the outside of it, and it's got all these things, and I'm like, because I don't have to maintain it, because you do have to maintain it.
Yeah, but also I guess it's a luxury product because of the cost. Bricks feel like they're more expensive. They're marketed like a luxury product. Mm-hmm. They're marketed to architects and designers like a luxury product, like an architectural feature. And also the cost of labor is changing. We don't have enough labor for anything. So hence something with a large labor content, i.e. bricklaying, is going to be more expensive and become a luxury product. Yep. So I guess my question is, have bricklayers changed? Is there a different type of bricklayer now that it is more like a luxury product, more like an artisan product, rather than a general purpose, let's build product? Because you hear these things about bricklayers making a lot of money. You hear about brickies driving Lamborghinis and maybe not Lamborghinis, maybe something below Lamborghini, maybe a basic Maserati. I don't know. But you hear these things about them making a couple of hundred grand a year or even more. Is it true? Can you make a good living as a brickie?
You can, but I will say that is the very small minority.
Like YouTubers, right? Where the small minority make all the money.
Even some of the YouTubers aren't making much money, I'll be honest with you. So because the industry has changed and we have got a drop in the number of bricklayers that we have in Australia just to do the work, and we've had a massive drop in volume a massive drop in volume in houses. So once upon a time, so let's say a little example here. Nearly everyone, when they meet a bricklayer, they go, how many can you lay in a day? How many bricks can you lay in a day? Well, I would have said 15 years ago on the majority of the houses we were working on, I would have said most brickies were going to lay 500 bricks in a day with the labourer feeding them mortar and bricks and good access.
And to put it into context, for listeners, 500 bricks would be how many square metres?
It's 50 bricks to a square metre. So there you go, 50. So that's 10 square metres.
Yeah, okay.
10 square metres.
That's a good size wall. Yeah.
It's a good size wall.
Yeah.
So now I would say from everything I know and the bricklaying companies that I talk to, we're averaging about 300 bricks a day per man.
Yep.
And that's not just because of the jobs. It's because access on the jobs is different. The way we're building houses, access on the jobs different. The different product, like when I started my apprenticeship, you had concrete blocks, you had solid bricks, and you had wire cut bricks, and they would have been the same color all the way through, and they were all the same size. They might have had a pattern or some speckles on the front of them, but that was pretty much it. You picked it up. Very rarely did it have a chip in it, but if it did, you put it down and you might have laid it in the pier behind the wall or something like that. Now we have bricks that are brown with a black glaze with a bit of sand on it, and they chip really easily. You double handle a lot of these bricks, and just because of the design they are, there's different slim ones, there's longer ones. There's a lot of variables now that weren't there. So the complexity's changed a little bit in the jobs. And so you just can't get that volume in anymore. So, and everyone goes, what do you charge per brick? So they're the two questions that you'll get as a bricklayer. Oh, how much you get paid per brick?
Yeah.
And how many can you lay in a day? Well, those metrics are completely gone now in bricklaying. The way it's gone and the type of product that gets installed and how they get installed, it's all completely changed. But bricklaying's kind of the only trade that you have those conversations. Like if someone was a plumber, no one goes up and goes, hey, how much do you get paid a meter for pipe, mate? How much do you get a tap? Or the electrician, how much do you get paid a PowerPoint? It's sort of not really a discussion there. And that metric of being able to say, how many you lay in a day and how much you get paid, it's really easy to calculate how much you earn or how much someone's earning. And that's kind of a nice thing to know. But those are sort of not really how a bricklayer needs to price a job now, because every job is so vastly different. It doesn't have the volume of product, the different products that are in it. So now the way a bricklayer has to price a job, even if he puts it into a per brick rate or a per block rate, he sort of has to look at it and go, I've got these operational expenses to run my company. Then I've got variable operational expenses of labor on each job. And then I've got to sort of estimate how long is it going to take me on that job. Then I'll have to convert it all back into that's the price for this job. So it's not like it used to be at all.
I'll tell you an anecdote. And someone I worked for was not very kind to brickies in terms of he said they're just above labourers. But to be fair, that's kind of where they sat in the pecking order a lot, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, he said some other things that I would never repeat, but he warned me about brickies, and I'm like, it's fine. They're fine. But I kind of working with brickies, I kind of knew, I got to know what he meant. But has that changed? Are they more professional? Is it different? I mean, I used to joke that, for example, and I did some quick sums on how often it happened on our building sites. And I just joked that every hour of every day, there's a brickie somewhere in Australia laying bricks on the wrong side of the string line. Guaranteed. I just did some back envelope numbers every hour, every day. But I guess, has that changed? Have they changed, like, in terms of how they're perceived, how they're respected? Has there been a change?
It's changing now for some of the reasons that we spoke about. So bricklaying has always been a craft. If you go into face brickwork, doing arches, doing all of that, custom bespoke work, which that work's been there, but there's always been a huge volume of doesn't need to be that perfect as an element. Now, you do need to be more of a craftsman than you were for the last 30 years. I truly believe that. So we've got a couple of things where it is changing. So We talked about numbers dropping in bricklayers before. So 30 years ago, there was approximately 28 to 30,000 bricklayers in Australia. And of those 28 to 30,000, 60 to 65% of them had completed an apprenticeship. So they'd done their time over 3 or 4 years, because to become a really good proficient bricklayer, it takes 4 or 5 years minimum to become good at your craft. And there's a lot of other stuff that you learn at trade school. Now we have bricklayers now of that 15 to 16,000 working in residential. There's about 20 odd thousand in Australia, but there's other ones in commercial. Of those bricklayers, 40 to 45% of them have done an apprenticeship. So there's a quite a low entry level into bricklaying. You can get in and become a bricklayer by just picking up labouring, learning, picking stuff up on the job. But that doesn't mean they can't be a good tradesman over a period of time. But there's still other things you need to learn when you go to trade school. You learn about the structural side of brickwork. You learn about those finite details that you're doing more of now that once upon a time, 20 years ago, you weren't doing as much of in that volume work where you just threw the bricks in. So that there has changed. And the way you have to run your business now, you have to run your business differently. You can't just be that contractor that goes out and just says, I'll give you $1.50 a brick to lay these bricks and away you go, and then just get a couple of contractors to come in and help you. With the way the whole industry's changed, you have to be a professional supplying a value package to the builder to be able to come in. You've got to know what you're doing with so many different products, so many different tires. So that is completely changing. And we do have a different generation now. You talked about some things there with bricklayers that they have a stigma about them. And I'm very open to it. They were big drinkers, big gamblers. As soon as it looked like it was going to rain, they left the job, off to the pub. And when they got to a certain age, they became jaded, broken, and broke. They were jaded on the industry. They were negative. They were physically broken. And they were always going, oh, this industry's crap because I've got nothing, you know, my wife's left me, all of those things. It was a stigma. It really was. But we've moved to a different generation now where it is a hard trade. It's hard on your body. You've got to know what you're doing, but it is hard on your body. So the people that are getting into it now that can see that there is a future in it as a career, they're looking at it as a business, and they're looking for different types of staff members to come into their business, because you can't just have a contractor come in here and there. I'm not sure if you've talked about it, but we've got new ABN laws or IR workplace laws now where you can't have all your employees as ABN contractors anymore. They have to be employed correctly. And that means you, as the bricklaying business owner, you've got to have your ducks in a row. So there is an image shift now, and it's looking like a profession, not just a job that you can slip into if you weren't great at school or something like that.
Is it a profession that's dying though? And I don't know if it is, but I guess I'll ask you, because you've got all these new products and cost pressures and labor pressures. So you're kind of going, hang on a minute. As a parent, you're kind of going, should my kids be getting into bricklaying? Because I've seen it diminishing in terms of quantity. Is there going to be any bricks to lay, or is it going to be a fringe kind of artisan thing? And you kind of think, well, there's several factors. It's labor intensive and it's expensive relative to other building systems. And one of the things that has come in that has taken a little bit away from brickwork is that you have cementitious facades that are reasonably durable, as opposed to the alternative to bricklaying some time ago was timber cladding, which you had to repaint and maintain, or some pretty ugly fibro, which you also had to maintain, or you had to paint just because it was so ugly. Whereas today you have all these systems that are easier to install than ever and quite durable. They're effectively a compressed cement sheet. So is that all still draining the pond for the brick industry? Where is it heading? And is it it's been in decline. Is it still declining? And what's the future, I guess, is maybe the question.
Yeah. I've got you. I believe there's a great future for brickwork and bricks into the future. I actually think it's bottomed out. So over the last 30 years, it has been a bit of a ski slope coming down of the use of bricks in residential construction. The number of bricks have been on the decline for 30 years, but they have bottomed out and they're probably on the way back up for a couple of different So that introduction of all of those different claddings, and they have been improved. They have been improved over a period of time because some of those early claddings that were used in 90s, 2000s, they were problematic. They swelled, they opened up, the water got into them. If they weren't maintained right, they became problematic. And even some of these aerated concrete panels that have been put on houses, they've ended up being a little bit problematic and they've had to change installation the way they do that too, because they've had to open up cavities because they were putting them hard against frame. If they weren't sealed properly or the stuff that was put against them, they're like a sponge. They raise water straight up. All masonry sucks in water, but some of these ones that aren't hard fired or hard cured, they've been problematic with mold and breathing problems with people in houses. So a lot of the cladding still have problems, and there's two big reasons we moved away from brick. One, cost of the product to put it on. That was one. Now some of them, they might be similar square meter or slightly less, but then there's a maintenance cost on it down the track. But the other part was in residential construction, a lockup is a very, very important part of residential construction. And for those of the listeners out there, a standard residential slab payment, frame payment, roof payment, lockup payment, then other payments moving on to a final payment. When a builder's building a house, lockup payment is the first time that the builder has more money come in than they've spent on the property. When I was running a building company as a construction manager, the lockup was a very important thing. And you can put a cladding on the outside of the house and get a house locked up really quickly to get your payment in. Brickwork, if there's a delay in getting that bricklayer there, it might take 3 or 4 weeks to brick up the house instead of a week. Those delays not just delay your payment, but those delays can cascade to a 2 or 3 month delay in the end build. That has been one of the problems. If bricklayers understand that and they can have a business model with the right amount of staff to come in and brick up the house quickly and hit the targets, then their builder are more likely to use brick or consider using brick because they're a professional operation and they think that way.
Yeah, but I think it's speed is of the essence. And I think that bricks, well, I guess my experience or my backyard is Sydney's inner west and east. And in pretty much all cases, brickwork is slower. Like it slows down the build as opposed to dinsel, which is, I guess, plastic formwork that gets infilled. I forget what the name of the category is, but I guess plastic, formwork dinsel's the market leader, as I understand. There's a couple of others, but it's so much
faster.
Effectively
another form of tilt-up concrete. That's what it is. It's another form of tilt-up concrete.
Yeah,
another form of concreting.
It's a formwork system effectively that easy to assemble, lightweight, easy to move up onto the next slab. So it just speeds things up substantially, and then you fill it. It has downsides. It's not as precise as brickwork. It's not. You need to then typically clad the internal wall and straighten it out because it's never as straight as blockwork. Assuming you're had a good block layer or good brick layer, then always much straighter than dinsel. Dinsel moves around because it's plastic form, right? So it can wobble and move, but it is so much faster and it's so much cleaner. And yes, you've got a concrete pour that's messy, but at least you don't have like a crew for a week making a mess, right? And washing out cavities and doing all those things. And there's a lot more supervision. Because as a licensed builder, you need to do all those checks with brickies, right? You need to make sure that they've cleaned the cavities, they've put ties in, they've done everything the right way. I guess it's pretty technical, right?
Of course.
You need to make sure, and with good brickies, with brickies you can trust, you don't have to do much. But with brickies you're not used to, you do need to make sure they've done all the core ties that needed to be done and put weep holes in and put damp courses in, you know, like, so there's more supervision potentially.
Yeah.
So it's time. And so it's not just the cost of the brick that's laid or the square meter wall. It's actually the cost of supervision and the cost of time. And everyone wants it to be done faster and built faster. And it's still, people are still frustrated that it's going to take 12 months to build a house. So that's my take. That's why I think brick's moving out of the picture, at least where we are, but cost dollars and dollars, I guess, in different ways. And even when you said it's the lockup, still about dollars, like, so
of course
I think it's, there's a multitude of, I feel like I'm shitting on bricks a bit, like I didn't mean to, I'm just pointing out, but I feel like I'm not negative about bricks. It's just unfortunate that when we've got a budget driven project, we have to design them out. There's no way around it, and all use them sparsely, maybe on an interior, somewhere on the interior where it's a feature and you get the thermal mass benefits. For the bottom down, it's because it's changing in nature. It's no longer a commodity. It was a commodity for a long time, right? But now it's changing to a finish. So it's changing to a finished product. And I think it's down to the brick companies making a sale and making it attractive.
So something that takes up a large area of wall, there's a large area. Well, you want to try and cover that and reduce costs in that. But generally, that's to pay for something else. And that's the other part that we haven't really talked about in construction, that in the last 30 years, say back in the late 90s, you wouldn't have put a $400 mixer in your kitchen. You wouldn't have put a stone bench top in or things like that. You would have had more budgetary products and spent more on the outside on the structure. And that comes down to when the person's building the home, they're thinking about it when they live in it and what's going to benefit them. They don't really think about that the outside cladding is going to benefit them. That's just got to be there. It's part of the build. So we have had those things evolve as well. So the things that take up massive labor component, of course, when we're building a new build, the biggest expenses are taxes, labor, and material. They're the biggest expenses, and the taxes are hidden in both of those. So you're trying to drive down, get the cost down as much as you can. And of course, you look to things that are going to save your labor. That's where you look to it and get a cheap product, less labor to put it on there if you can get that, or even more expensive product, but less labor to put it in there. And bricklaying, you're right. We haven't got mechanical aids. We haven't got other things that can help us reduce time and cost on those sorts of things, like, which in other industries, there have been some great savings in that over the last few decades or even multiple decades. Sort of, we've gone to plastic pipe where they squeeze the pipes together and join them and all that sort of stuff instead of soldering copper pipe and things like that. It might not be, the overall job might not be much cheaper, but a little bit more for the product, less time on the job. Also labor saving components,
So do you see it? The future of it is it more like stonemasons work, like, are now, is it that sort of a trade where, I mean, you do have a lot of great stonemasons and they charge a lot of money, but again, it's an art. So is it going to be like that? And what's the future? Are we going to be still talking about bricks, or is it going to be fringy like rammed earth walls and other in that context?
No, I think because of the climate we have across Australia, I don't think bricks are going anywhere. And Brickworks have just spent, I don't know how much they spend on that new brick plant, but it is huge. There's actually a full YouTube documentary on it. They've spent, I can't remember the exact amount of money they spent, but they're investing in new factories that, of course, use less labor. Use less labor to make the bricks. But their forecast is they're still going to be used there because of their durability, because of the thermal mass, because of those reasons. They may not be used in the same form that they were 30 years ago. I don't think we'll be going back to doing brick footings with brick piers, with timber floors, with garages that are solid brick garages or brick garages with piers and stick framing roofs on top of it. We're putting trusses on it. I don't think we're going back to that. We're never going to go back to that. But we're definitely going to have, people still want a brick veneer home. they still want a brick home. In the volume game, there are a couple of builders. I'm in Victoria. There are a couple of builders here that have stopped using some of those stand-up cemental claddings and have gone back to brick because of problems that they were having with the product. So there is a shift because they crack. The sunlight on them doesn't really look good. The north-facing sun doesn't really make something that's not perfectly beautifully rendered look nice. So just the complaints and moisture. So there is some other changes there. There is some other changes there. So I don't think brickwork's going anywhere. But what I do think is going to be changing in the next 10 years is the bricklayer's attitude towards the industry and how they see themselves as professionals rather than just tradesmen. They will be certainly seeing themselves as tradesmen. I don't think we'll be dropping the amount of numbers of bricklayers in Australia, but I think the overall quality and standard of bricklayers are going to increase because they have to because of the type of work they do.
And a left field question, and I didn't put this in the notes, but see if you can cope with it. What about bricklaying robots? Okay, there's two types. One is the bricklaying machine, which I don't know if you've seen some time ago, dedicated bricklaying machine, but two, with AI and robots and robot dogs and robot, like, is there an automation coming? Or is that an automation that's going to happen in a factory? And certainly topical. And those that know me will know my attitude towards prefab houses. You know, they're legitimate, great idea, but never have worked as a solution to cost-efficient housing that I know of. Even in Japan, Toyota famously created production line for homes with a view to making them more economical. As it turns out, they sell ultra, ultra premium homes that are prefab. So it didn't work even in ultra efficient Japan. Do you think robots are a legitimate? Will the brickie of the future have a crew of four robots that come out of the back of the van and start laying bricks?
I don't think so. There's just too many variables on a construction site. There's too many things that have to change. Well, once something's set up, you think, oh yeah, we could put a robot or computer on that and a robot with AI components into that. And you think that would work. But then bricks are still a variable product. Like, they vary in length. They vary in size. You can't just go, yep, we're going to put in the exact 10 mil gap between each brick. If the bricks vary 3 or 4 mil, varying around, then you get to the end of it and they're like, oh, then you've got to put a piece in, then it doesn't look right, then code says that perps have got to be plumb on face brickwork, all of these other things. So I don't think that'll happen. And usually when you're bringing in a machine to lay bricks, you need a bit of space.
Yeah.
You need a bit of space around the buildings. And that's not going to work on conventional construction sites now. They're getting tighter and tighter and more compact. And a lot of people have said to me that, do you think that 3D printed houses will make a difference to masonry? Well, I've looked at a lot of those 3D printed things. I just went to World of Concrete and had a look at all of those products over there. And they're actually still very expensive to run.
Yes.
It actually costs more than the labor and the machinery. You need a lot of space around to be able to do it. You need a lot of time around, and it's still not that time effective. I think there was some houses in Sydney built 3D printing that were on 60 minutes a little while ago. And I don't think the savings were any quicker than, say, a concrete block house, and you had to be happy with walls on the inside of the house that looked like it had come out of a two-space tube. You know, yeah. So it depends on someone wants that sort of finish too.
Well, one thing, I guess the practicality of a robot laying a brick, I'm sure if they can work out how to lay a trowel, they can probably measure a brick to within 3 millimeters or thereabouts. I mean, you know about bricklaying machines more than I do. I thought it was just a gimmick, but it's happening? Is that what you're saying?
It's been tried a few times. There are some bigger machines that pop in blocks for a whole 3D design that they've used in Perth, because Perth's built a bit differently to the eastern states in Australia. They still build solid brick homes.
Yeah, right.
Over there, the majority of homes in Western Australia are solid brick homes. They're rendered walls, solid brick inside, and face brick on the outside. Absolutely.
With insulation in between, I guess.
Yeah, they put insulation in between, but it's actually, they have other, obviously there's every part of Australia has a different climate zone. So there's different requirements to release the heat, to capture the heat. Obviously they're not trying to capture heat over there. They're wanting, but all the homes have big eaves.
Yeah.
So if you look at a raw frame that's gone up, which is it's solid brickwork, the bricklayer puts in the windows, they do all the internal walls, they do the external walls, and between the top plate on the inside of the house and where the eave sheet marries in, it would be nearly 600 or 700 mil low. So you can see that they've either got, with the low pitch of the house, they've got quite a large eave to stop the sun getting on the walls. And that's just the natural way they build over there. But the biggest builder in WA owns the brick factory.
Right.
Or used to, I think he might have just sold it. He's got put BGC there, the largest volume home builder in WA. So everywhere in Australia is a little bit different. And you're right, you think about your regional area where it's very high density, and those areas that you're in Sydney, probably not going to use so much brick. But in other areas, in suburban areas where there's a bit more space and we can still, they're still going to use them for sure. Absolutely.
Any practical tips you can give to someone who's maybe designing their house or having a house design in terms of like what are tips for economizing brick construction? What are some things that you can do to reduce the cost of a brick wall?
Yeah, good question. My biggest advice that I would give anyone after living in solid homes, think about your solid home with your thermal mass inside.
Yeah.
But also you need to be aware that think about the benefits you're going to get from the thermal mass in savings in energy efficiency in your home that maybe you have a little bit rougher and a different, not you're not having smooth plaster on the walls, you're having the brickwork or the blockwork on the inside, because those things, how many times was the last time you looked at the wall and went, oh, that smooth plaster is beautiful. But if you were looking at your power bill and going, oh, I'm saving $150 on my power or my gas this quarter because I've got thermal mass in my home, that's my bigger piece of advice. When you're building your home, think about the thermal efficiency of the house and not just what you're being given on your energy rating on your plan. Actually think about going back to the fundamentals of facing the house in the right direction. If that's possible, yep, definitely get the thermal mass, double glazed windows, all of those things in the home as a benefit. And it brings masonry back into your home. I understand that, but the benefits that you'll get out of it, that's the biggest thing I could say to anyone that I would say about thinking about using brick in their home. Think about getting more thermal mass into that home, depending on what the climate is, obviously. But absolutely. And think about the durability of the product on the outside and the life cycle of the home, not just the time that you're going to be living in it.
And can you share some stats on what the cost of per square meter, what the cost is in different cities, and does it vary a lot throughout the country?
It's up and down. It's up and down, and it does vary. And it varies because of that supply and demand of the tradesman and the skill of the tradesman.
And there's more in Perth, you said? Maybe we should bring them over.
Oh, most definitely it's more in Perth. And so I say, yeah, more in Perth. The way they build over there, well, the bricklayer comes in and basically runs the job until the trusses go on.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much. They get given a slab. They get given a plan. They flick out the walls. They put the brickwork up. They put the windows in, door frames in, all of those sorts of things. So it's very different to what a bricklayer would do in Victoria. So that is very different. And they have more access around the home because they build the home. They're very efficient because they just build their way out of the slab. They run around it. And it's very different. Tell you exactly what it is per square meter for. Bricks vary a lot in price. You can get a brick for $1. You can get a brick for $5. So that makes a big difference. As I said, there's 50 bricks to a square meter. But around that $3 for the labor component, which is going to make it $150 a square meter, plus the product on top of it, that's sort of depending on the access, and obviously there's other variables as well. But around that, so if you're looking at $2 a brick, $3 for the sand, cement, and ties and sundries that go to tie the walls together, and the labor component, that's sort of working around that $250 a square meter.
Yeah.
And then it never has to be touched again if it's face brickwork.
Yeah. And then the other thing that I know that a lot of clients are shocked by is that if you use non-standard bricks, if you start using little skinny bricks or European imported bricks, that cost can double if you've got a non-standard brick. So that's the other thing, because bricks are very much fashionable in a lot of circles. They come up in renders, they come up in AI generated architectural sort of renders, and they're pretty or just on architectural design, on design or ArcDA. There's a lot of brick buildings, and a lot of them have these beautiful Spanish or Portuguese, very narrow gauge bricks. And so clients love them, but when you tell them the price to lay them, they change their mind, and it all adds up. But non-standard bricks don't just cost more. They're also, it's not just per brick. They actually cost more per brick to lay, I think, from memory, because there's more to it, right?
Yeah, there's more to it. And I'll be honest, because there is a lot of introduction with so many different types of bricks over the, say, the last 10 or 15 years, imported bricks, different ones, the tradesmen are not laying them all the time. It's very hard to be efficient as a business and productivity if the product changes and the job changes and how you're doing something changes all the time. And a lot of bricklayers may not have used that particular product. They might be able to adapt and learn how to lay that product very quickly because that's their trade, but they've never done that before. So they're actually a bit scared to give a price. And I've had this conversation with architects in the past that every time they use something that's still brickwork or still masonry, but it's different, the bricklayer will give them a massively different price per square meter to lay it than what it would be for a standard brick. And there's a confusion about it. So yes, there will be more work in it, but also there's unknown for the tradesmen. So they're allowing for that as well because they haven't used that product in the past. If they were using it every day, they would sit there and go, on this job, we can cream it in, but we've never used that product before. We don't know what's going to happen. And majority of, like 90% of their expenses as a bricklaying business are the labor that they're paying to their staff. Yeah. So you can't afford to lose on a job. Once upon a time, a builder would say to you, oh, we're paying you this much per thousand, and you win some, you lose some. But now you can't afford to lose on a job. You can't afford to lose on a job. That you're a builder, like you see the amount of builders that are going bankrupt everywhere, you can't afford to lose on a job anymore.
Oh, yeah.
You won't catch it up.
I think there's a change in build economics generally where, yeah, that sort of having a punt and having a go and throwing your hat in the ring and like it doesn't work anymore. It doesn't stack up. The industry's tight. It's all tightened up. You won't get away with it. So, yeah, you used to kind of win tenders and then try and work out what you forgot to put in, right? You can't do that anymore. Like it's just, I guess cost of labor is part of it, but it's just not viable. It doesn't seem viable as a business to even submit a tender. I mean, we submit a cost estimate, then we propose to create a budget on behalf of the owner, but it just, yeah, I feel like the industry's changed substantially to where it was having a go. Now it's more measured in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And if I come back to look at it from a bricklayer's perspective, when you're talking about that, because bricklayers are doing the majority of their work, like that 98% for builders, I know that the stats are around 25 to 30% of bricklayers are owed money 30 days past their due date for their clients. And they're scared of taking on a new builder to go and work for, because if a builder's going bust or something's wrong, you're taking on a new client, there's those unknowns. Very quickly, if the builder goes broke and isn't able to pay you, they'll take you down really quickly too.
Yeah.
So that's another part of it too, where, and that's part of what, if I can come back to what we do at Brickies Network, we actually teach bricklaying business owners to go, think of yourself as the builder. The builder wouldn't enter into a contract unless it was signed, unless they knew if their client had capacity to pay and those sorts of things. You need to do that too. You need to put your proposal forward and then enter into an agreement, get some detail on paper, do the research about your clients that you're working for, because you can't diversify out of new construction. That's where your business is, and you can't afford to have one client not pay.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It seemed to be like there was more fat in the system at one point in time, And okay, someone wouldn't pay you, but you'd make it up. And like you said, you'd lose some and make it up on the next one. It just doesn't feel like you can make it up. It feels like everything's tighter and the whole industry's tighter. And I guess the labor market's tighter. So you're right. It does feel a lot like that. You look, everyone loves bricks. I think there's a real cultural grounding in Australia around brick. We used to bricks. We grew up with bricks, grew up in a house that was brick. And I think there's a strong connection. And I think that, that emotional connection will be the thing that, that really defines the brick industry. And they look great. They look a well-laid, well-designed building in modern brick is phenomenal. But yeah, even in the last 5 years, it's a real luxury product. Like that's where I've ended up. It's the first thing that gets, even today we were looking at house that we've designed and we noticed that it had brick walls and the rest of the house had brick walls. But I think we were starting to go, well, who sees this wall? And we're starting to unpack. And of course, it's that knock-on effect where footings for brick walls are bigger because brick walls are heavier. And it sort of had this rolling effect of, well, is that the right choice? It does feel like a premium product in a very tight market. But Andy, unless I've missed something that you really want to talk about.
I don't think we've missed anything, Matt. We didn't really go into wastage of product. We didn't really talk about that, but bricks can be zero waste. A lot of people don't realize that can be zero waste. A lot of people don't realize that you get to the end of a job and you may have a pile of bricks left over that are chipped or not used. A lot of the time they just get, when a site clean gets done in residential building, they just all get put in the back of the truck and they get sent to landfill and they get put in the ground. Those bricks, they can get into bricks and they can be a zero wastage product, where some of the other claddings, they're not zero wastage. They're not zero wastage. I know when we were building houses and using cement sheet on houses and different types of cladding, we'd have huge amounts of wastage that just go and pile up in the skip and go straight to the tip. So those things are actually really positive about brickwork too, but we didn't really get to that.
I guess from that zero wastage, I've got an anecdote from one of my sites where, you know, not the company that I own, but where I used to work. And I guess blocks at the end of the job always used to get moved to the next job, right? But I did the sums. I just did, again, as a younger project manager, I just went, it doesn't make sense to, and mind you, they have to be carried up the site, loaded on the ute, driven by typically the site manager, who was sometimes maybe looking to get away from his own site for an hour or so. And you just kind of go, if you want to get away from your site, just go fishing or something. But these blocks then would end up on the next site and they weren't the right blocks and they'd get moved. And you just kind of go, no, just break them and put them in the back of the retaining wall as drainage media. Totally like the most economically rational thing you can do on a site sometimes. So by the time you get a labourer to carry them up, load them on, or arrange to get them picked up, like a lot of the times, yeah. So they are zero waste in terms of, well, you can't do that with offcuts of blue board or other things. But yeah, I think in the real world, yeah, it was this funny thing that happened a few times until I caught it and I was like, what are you doing? Why is that guy carrying blocks up the hill? It's not per block. This is costing us double what the block's worth to carry it up the hill, get it on your ute, for you to drive it and then unload it and then store. And then that's before you even store it for a year before you then eventually bin it. But yeah, that's the economics of recycling blocks. Just didn't stack
blocks
up.
Blocks are a little bit different to clay bricks, but yeah, absolutely. Yeah. For sure. Yeah. I get it completely.
Andy Shaw, look, thanks for your time today and thanks for joining us on Buildopedia. Really appreciate your time and yeah, we look forward to chatting again.
Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed the chat too, Matt. Thank you very much.
And if people want to reach out to you, your company's the Brickies Network. Tell us how they can reach you.
Yeah, absolutely. They can reach out to me through the website at brickiesnetwork.com, or you can email me at andy@brickiesnetwork.com, Or if you want to call me, you can call me on 1300 Trowel at the office.
There you go. That's easy. Sounds easy. Thanks so much, Andy. Have a great day.
Thanks, mate. You too. Bye.
You've been listening to Buildapedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildapedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.